4.
I said my goodbyes with mixed feelings about leaving. The past few days had been great once I'd let go and immersed myself into visiting with my family. I was stuffed, having eaten more in 4 days than I usually did in 2 weeks. Bev seemed better as she stood on our childhood home's front step with her lovely family waving as I drove off. I had the box of Dad's belongings in the back seat, along with the rubbing from Clayton's grave, and I dialed Marcus the moment I was out of Bev's range. I peered through the rearview mirror, noticing a dark-tinted BMW emerge from across the street, failing to signal as it ran a stop sign. Marcus answered on the second ring.
"Rex, you have to be thinking what I am, right?"
I laughed, imagining his goofy expression. From the tone in his voice, it was obvious he was excited, probably pacing around his small apartment. "About what?"
"The object near Pluto! This is it!"
"I've been off the grid for a couple days. You're going to have to fill me in." I drove from town, happy to be on my way home. It had been nice to reconnect with my sister, but I was on the brink of a major breakthrough. I was sure of it.
"It's doubled. There are two of them."
"Two?
How is that possible?"
"No idea. They split like a cell, like mitosis." "More likely there were always two sections stacked together to appear as one. It's too far out to see clear enough," I guessed.
"Maybe." "You're going home?"
Marcus asked. "Yeah, be there in a couple of hours. I need you to come over."
"I already was. Remember you invited me for dinner, said there'd be pie,"
Marcus reminded me. "Sorry, buddy, forgot the pie. But we can order takeout, even from that crappy noodle place you keep mentioning." I wanted to share the news about what I'd discovered, but held back. My foot pressed firmly to the pedal, and I had to ease off. The state troopers were out on the Sunday after a holiday, waiting for low-hanging fruit.
"You must have something really good, then."
"I'll be there." Marcus paused, and I could sense more coming.
"Rex, what if they are heading for Earth?"
"The objects near Pluto?"
"Sure. What if they've decided now's the time?"
I prided myself in the evidence of fact, and I'd never openly admitted my belief in aliens in a professional setting. I'd followed the careers of some of the top people in my field, and anyone that remotely accepted the role of extraterrestrials in the shaping of our ancient cultures was quickly lambasted and kicked out of all social circles. There may not have been enough actual proof for me to straight up say without a shred of uncertainty that I knew aliens had visited us. On the other hand, I was certain my father, Dirk Walker, had believed, and that kept me open-minded. Traffic was heavier, and I glanced in the mirror as I attempted to lane change around a particularly slow semi-trailer. The dark BMW was still trailing me. "It's nothing, just someone from the big city visiting relatives. Meet me at my place at 5. We'll chat then." I hung up before Marcus could ask any more questions, and instead of listening to talk radio for the duration of the trip, I set it to some soothing classic rock. I drummed my fingers to the beat of an old Journey song and kept an eye on my speed as I anxiously drove for Boston. By the time I'd entered the city limits, there was no sign of the other car, and I breathed a sigh of relief. Something really had me on edge. Marcus was already waiting for me as I pulled in front of my brownstone. Amazingly, there was an open parking spot 3 units down, a benefit of everyone leaving town for the weekend. Marcus sat on my front steps, scrolling on his cell phone, and I shoved the box at his chest. "Do you mind?" He grunted, and I retrieved my keys from my pocket, unlocking the townhouse door. I loved everything about my home, and had lived here for the past decade, long before I'd even considered a job in the city. My parents had met in Boston and spent their first 5 years struggling in a small apartment downtown while Mom worked 2 jobs, Dad finishing his final dissertation at Harvard. The place was stuffy when I entered, and I kicked off my shoes. The snow hadn't hit Boston yet, but it would only be a matter of time. I opened the front window, cool air passing by the white curtains, and I dropped my keys in the bowl on the foyer table.
"What's in this?"
Marcus asked, setting the box on the kitchen table. "Shoes," I reminded him, He rolled his eyes and took off the laced boots, tossing them to the entrance. He ditched his jacket near the door, and I groaned at his taste in attire. It was nearly impossible to see Marcus in something other than a comic book or science fiction T-shirt. Marcus was digging into the books, flipping through the empty one. "What's a bridge?" "That's what we're going to find out. I need you to locate someone named Hardy." I sloughed my jacket off and rolled up my sleeves.
"Hardy? Never heard of him. Where do I start?"
Marcus opened his laptop and started making quick work of the search. "My dad mentions it in his journal. Hardy had theories about a bridge, something with a symbol. They found the first token, and it mentions five more in existence," I told him.
"We know there are six. We've chased down every angle from your dad's records and come up empty-handed each time."
"Do you remember this summer?" he asked. "The AK-47s ring a bell?" I placed the food order on the app and cracked a couple of beers, passing one to Marcus. "Here's what we have. Dad and Clay knew there were six of these tokens. What if they collected all six, used them to create this bridge?"
"Then what?" Marcus asked.
"Your guess is as good as mine. That's why we have to find Hardy. He was ahead of them, so he had more details than Dad did. They were using his leads, which tells us he had a theory on the bridge." I took a sip of the IPA, my tongue tingling at the hops.
"Locate Hardy, find out what the bridge is and where it leads."
Marcus smiled, fingers flying across the keyboard.
"Not seeing much on Hardy, but I'll run it through my database. Should get a hit if there's ever been mention of him in any collegiate published papers or museum archives."
Marcus was a genius at information gathering, and he held more research details on his personal server than anyone else I'd ever heard of. He liked to keep it low-key, not often sharing the resource with anyone but me. By the time the noodle delivery guy arrived, we'd drunk the first beer, and his program beeped, indicating there were over 200 hits. Most of them were references to a man from the 1800s, Jeffrey A. Hardy. His work had revolved around the study of migrating Neanderthals, and that didn't seem like a match.
"How's the food?"
Marcus asked, slurping a noodle. It spilled on his keyboard, and he wiped at it with a napkin, shrugging. "It's not the worst thing I've ever had. Who's next?" I asked. "Anyone from the 60s or 70s? Marcus's eyes grew, and he clicked over a search result.
"Brian Hardy. He worked at Columbia for a few years in the late 60s, says he was let go after an incident, but the file was redacted."
"You got all that from your server?" I was surprised at the level of detail this kid was able to access.
"You think I half-ass anything? It's why I was your favorite student," he told me.
"Favorite might be a stretch. How about most determined?" I smiled at his frown.
"Same thing. Brian Hardy. This has to be the guy."
I leaned over his shoulder, staring at the screen. There was noodle slop dripping from the top of it, and I used a sleeve to wipe it.
"For someone so invested in his computers, you might want to take better care of them. Where's Brian now? And don't tell me he's dead." "You're not going to believe this," Marcus said.
He paused, wagging his eyebrows for suspense.
"Cut it out.
What's so special about him?"
"Him? Not a lot. Looks like he never took another teaching job after Columbia, but he's done work for some pretty powerful collectors."
Marcus switched browsers, pointing to the website. Hunter Madison. The man was a billionaire eccentric who was into collecting anything and everything involving ancient cultures, particularly those centered on visitors from the stars. Not many people outside the circle knew of it. On paper, he was an investor, owning majority shares in at least seven Venture 500 firms. I was aware of him because my father had worked for the man. From what I could gather, most of his expeditions had been funded by Madison.
"You know this guy, right?"
Marcus asked.
To say I knew him was a stretch.
I knew he'd been at my father's funeral service and apparently had a heated conversation with my mother. I heard my uncle had intervened and Madison had left in a flurry, tearing away in a black Lincoln limousine.
"We met when I was a kid. Where's he living?" I asked. "Last known address is in New York. Once a New Yorker, always a New Yorker,"
Marcus said. I laughed and went to the fridge, taking out two more beers. Didn't you used to live there?
I'm the outlier, he replied.
Ain't that the truth? Mark it down, we're making a road trip, I told him.
Now?
I glanced at the clock. I was beat after the weekend, not to mention I'd had a drink and the holiday traffic was going to be insane.
Tomorrow. I think you're forgetting something.
Marcus started cleaning up the styrofoam containers, tossing them into the empty garbage can under my sink.
What's that?
You know, that thing you do during the week? You wear patches on your jacket, probably chew a pipe, try not to gawk at the hot third-year students twirling their hair around their fingers, asking you for some personal attentive at-home studying. He said the last, making air quotes with his fingers.
My job.
He was right.
Damn it. Finals are soon. I couldn't wait 2 weeks.
See if you can reach this Brian Hardy and make the appointment for Friday. I have class in the morning. We'll go after.
What if I have plans?
Marcus asked. He was a freelance research assistant, and from the sounds of things, work was skinny these days.
Do you?
He lost his grin.
I'll set it up. What if he won't talk to me?
Then he'll have to turn us down in person. Either way, we're going to New York this Friday.
There was something else, right? An important discovery you couldn't wait to share with me? Now would be a good time.
The rubbing, I said, slapping a palm against the table. I couldn't believe I'd forgotten it. Marcus turned to face me, raising his hands.
Rubbing? I don't like the sounds of this. Quit kidding around.
I went to the box, picked out the folded paper cemetery map, and opened it, smoothing it on the table beside Marcus. I found this on Clayton Belvedere's gravestone. They're numbers.
I can see that. Why haven't you ever thought of this before?
He asked, his lips moving as he recited the digits at a whisper.
I haven't gone looking. How was I to know there would be some secret message engraved on the tombstone?
Marcus shook his head and shrugged.
They don't make sense. There are no degrees or directions listed.
Wait, what about decimal degrees? I asked, and he frowned while sipping his beer.
The decimal is near the end. I don't think that's it.
Puzzles. Why did everything have to be secretive and hidden from plain sight? Who else would have been desperate for coordinates on some obscure treasure hunter's gravestone in a nowhere city a couple of hours from Boston, unless it was meant to be a message for someone?
That's it!
I stood up, bumping into the table. My bottle fell over, spilling on the map. I picked the paper up by the corner, the liquid running over the rubbing. It was fine.
Now who's the messy one?
Marcus asked before grabbing the paper towel. He dabbed it gently.
What has you channeling Archimedes?
He must have set this up before he went missing. Clayton knew the message would eventually be put on his grave's marker.
They're coordinates, Marcus. This is the big break we've been waiting for.
I could hardly contain myself. I'd been chasing ghosts for so long without the hint of a real trail, always coming out with less money and fewer answers. This could be the moment everything changed.
They're not, I'm telling you.
Marcus stopped and stared at the sheet.
Unless the numbers are reversed.
He opened the computer again. Clicking on the mapping app, he keyed in the digits as they were. It didn't work. He started with the first string, adding the last number at the beginning, then a decimal, and the next six numbers from right to left. He repeated it with the second string on the rubbing, and his finger hovered over the search button.
Would you quit being so dramatic? Hit it,
I told him, and he obeyed. I slunk to the chair as the map displayed the location. It was the middle of nowhere in Venezuela, 400 miles south of Caracas. From what little I knew of the region, I wasn't overly keen on making the trek.
What the hell are we going to find there?
Marcus asked me, but I really had absolutely no idea.
I couldn't begin to guess. I'm sure you have a few theories.
I considered this statement. Why was it on Clay's grave? That implies my father didn't want anyone revisiting his trail. Maybe Clay did this without my dad's knowledge. He hoped to leave the breadcrumbs for his daughter or someone willing to follow. It was his out, or maybe he just wanted someone to eventually learn what happened.
You don't think they died in a collapse on an underground site, do you?
Marcus leaned away in his chair and we both stared at the satellite image of Venezuela. I shook my head and tapped my finger on the table. I know that's the widely acknowledged hypothesis, but there wasn't proof to corroborate that. We think they were brought to Portugal by boat, but that's where the line runs dry. Of course, no one had truly put a real investigation into their disappearance, not to the level that would have been necessary to track them. I'd done my best when I'd graduated college, spending a summer backpacking every site possible in Portugal and Spain, attempting to learn any bit of information that might help. I'd returned with my tail between my legs and zero job prospects. Marcus's eyes had that excited glint in them, and he finished his beer.
When do we go?
To South America? I don't have the money to fund an expedition like this, I admitted. Do you have any idea how much it's cost me this last decade, not to mention paying you for your time?
A man has to eat, even if it is noodles.
Marcus patted the screen.
This could be the answer you've been waiting for.
There's no way you can ignore it. I was at a precipice. My career was going well, and I loved teaching. The school was becoming prestigious, a real step up for my resume. If I stayed long enough, did a great job, gained tenure, I could teach on panels, publish a few more papers, and build up my name in the community. No one knew who I was, since almost everything I'd done so far had been self-serving. There was also the offer to teach at Harvard, and despite my misgivings about the nepotism, I had to take Richard seriously. But this was important. My dad had traveled to all these locations. He'd gathered the 6 tokens, and one day, when I was 5 years old, he'd vanished. What was the bridge he'd spoken of? Brian Hardy was our lead. I made the decision on a stomach full of ramen and beer. I glanced outside, seeing the window cracked open. Snow had begun falling, and I closed it, staring across the street at the park. A father and son walked by, wearing matching jackets, their English bulldog sniffing a no parking signpost. We're going to New York Friday. We'll figure the rest out later, I told Marcus, and could almost hear his smile from across the room.
You need funding? I think I know someone interested in this kind of venture, Marcus said.
He didn't have to tell me who he was referring to.